Hi everyone, welcome back. This is part two of our mosquito episode. If you have accidentally opened this episode first, I would encourage you to go back and listen to part one first. You can listen to both part one and part two at your convenience. We have released them both today.
Welcome to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. I'm Lara Milligan.
And I'm Shannon Carnevale.
This podcast is brought to you by UF IFAS Extension in Polk and Pinellas counties.
So the other cool thing is that that data, once I know what species are there, can also be compared to something called Sentinel chicken data, which sounds hilarious, but if you're not familiar with the concept, there's basically chickens that are set out in strategic locations that their blood can be tested to see if there are antibodies to different viruses. So between that data and then the trapping data, they can put those two together and really get a good picture for what mosquitoes, species, and what diseases are currently out there.
Never fear, though, the chickens don't actually get sick. I just want to throw that out there.
Yes, correct. They are not. They're just testing for the antibodies. They're just harboring a place to harbor these diseases that can then be transmitted elsewhere. The really cool thing is we will include a link in the show notes where you can get access to a lot of the mosquito surveillance data that's available through the Department of Health, which I totally nerded out on it. So I encourage you to do the same. But basically, again, once they have all that information, their next goal is to treat the larva. We talked about this. Shannon mentioned this in the life cycle portion, but it is so much easier to treat mosquitoes at the larval stage because they're not flying around. We have a lot more tools available to us. We have a lot more environmentally friendly tools available to us. So that is where mosquito control districts are going to really hone in once they know what they have and where they're located. There are, of course, going to be cases when we miss the boat on treating them as at the larval stage, and we do have to treat them as adults. And once we get to that, there are far fewer environmentally friendly options available. We often think of fogging. That is a common technique that's done, whether it's aerial or from a truck. Now, I will say there's very specific efforts when that is done to not harm our other beneficial insects. So typically when it's done, it'll be between like very early morning hours, so like 1 to 6 a.m., so it's avoiding not only harming our native insects, but also us not having to inhale those chemicals as well. So that's like, obviously, you could go way more in depth with that. But I think that's also a good transition to us talking about control efforts that we as individuals can take and basically like what works and what doesn't, which I'm sure is really what y'all want to know.
Yes. What can we do to get rid of these flying pests?
So Shannon, do you want to kick us off on some mosquito myth busting when it comes to different things that we can do to keep mosquitoes away?
Yes, because this is a personal passion project of mine, is correcting myths around mosquitoes, because I do get so many questions about it, as I'm sure you do too, Lara. I want to start with one that I personally care a lot about, and that is the bug zapper.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, the bug zapper. And I will admit, there is something really joyous about sitting on your porch in the summer and watching things zap themselves in these bug zappers. There is a satisfaction there that is probably really deep-seated and I don't want to think about too much. But they don't work for mosquitoes, at least not effectively. You're going to have so much bycatch. You're going to be killing so many good insects with your mosquitoes. If you even get mosquitoes, let's be serious. They're just not that effective. The other ones that I think I get a lot of questions about are mosquito plants and eating a lot of garlic and other weird things. Let's start with mosquito plants. It is absolutely true that there are plants that mosquitoes don't like. I think that's true of any insect. There are plants that some insects like and some insects don't like. And you could potentially plant those and hope for the best, I guess, is the best way to put it. But the way that those plants work are through those essential oils that are in the plant material. And the only way that you can release those are to crush them or to cause physical damage to the plants. And then even still, it needs to be in very high concentrations. for them to be effective. So all that to say, you don't need to waste your money on re-landscaping your whole yard and mosquito repelling plants. And you don't need to buy a ton of bug zappers. And thankfully, you don't need to eat a ton of garlic either, because we don't have a lot of scientific evidence that eating any particular vegetable or herb or vitamin might help make you less attractive to a mosquito.
Yeah. And I would say probably for me, the number one question that I get asked is, if I install a bat house, will all the mosquitoes go away? And unfortunately, the answer is no. While bats do eat mosquitoes, it is typically a very, very, very tiny portion of their diet. So typically, right, larger bats especially will need more calories. And so their diet is going to be comprised of our larger invertebrates. So think like beetles and moths. They're not going to be going for a tiny, tiny mosquito. It should also be worth noting that bats typically feed at dusk and at night. And as we talked about earlier, there are plenty of mosquitoes that are active during the daytime. So,
or they just don't fly high enough for bats to really predate them.
Right. So that being said, I would love for you to install a bat house. However, you will not be benefiting the reduction of mosquitoes in your area by doing so.
Yeah. As much as we want you to install bat houses, we don't want you to do it for reasons that aren't honest.
Right.
But I think this is a good time that we can move to the things we can do and the things that we have so much evidence behind. And I think are really so much easier than trying to get bats to move into a bat house. Honestly. Yes. So we're going to talk about promoting the three D's when it comes to reducing mosquitoes and how to deal with them. And those three D's stand for dump, dress, and defend. So when we're talking about the first one, dump, what we're talking about is getting rid of standing water. Now, we talked very, very briefly about the life cycle of mosquitoes, the whole adult, egg, larva, and pupa. It's important to know that the mosquitoes that we're targeting tend to have a life cycle of about 7 to 10 days. So if you can dump all of the standing water in your yard and eliminate that breeding habitat every week, make it just one of your chores, you can significantly reduce the amount of mosquitoes around your home. These container mosquitoes, at least Aedes aegypti and Albopictus, they don't tend to travel very far. So if you and your neighbors can work together to get rid of standing water, remember, down to about a teaspoon of water, anything bigger than a bottle cap. If you and all of your neighbors do this, I can't properly estimate the amount of mosquitoes you will get rid of just by interrupting their breeding cycle.
Mm-hmm.
If you have areas of standing water in your yard or in your neighbor's yards that you cannot drain and cover, say a swale that holds water in artificial, you know, puddling type situation, you can also get something that is called BTI. And I am going to not try to pronounce that.
I think that's a good idea. BTI is a pretty commonly used acronym, if you will, for this product. And I will say, we have an artificial pond at my house and we were having some issues. It's within a screened in area, but anyway, we still had issues with mosquitoes breeding in it. And this was a very, very affordable and very effective option for us. So,
yeah. And BTI is an active ingredient. It's a bacteria that is available in many different brand names. So we're not going to go into that, but you can get it in chunks or dunks or donuts, or you can even get it in more granular pieces, so that if you have a lot of bromeliads in your yard, for instance, it's not really reasonable to go through and remove all your bromeliads, but you can sprinkle these granules throughout your bromeliads and it will reduce mosquitoes from breeding in those bromeliads. So that's a wonderful thing to do. It's important to know that you cannot add this to lakes or ponds, natural lakes and ponds. It is not legal to add this to them because, first of all, it won't be effective. You'll be wasting your money. But if it is effective, if you put enough of it in to cause a difference, you could also be harming other non-target species.
Our second D, if you remember, is dress. And by this, it's pretty straightforward here. If you're in an area with lots of mosquitoes, we suggest that you dress in loose, light-colored, long sleeves, as well as pants. So you're covering your whole body. It's loose-fitting, light-colored. Pretty straightforward. But if you do that, that will definitely help with limiting the area that's available to mosquitoes to bite you.
Yeah. And that loose, I can't emphasize enough how important that is. The number of times I have been bitten through my pants or through the back of my shirt. Oh, it's irritating. But that moves us on to our third D, which is defend. And in the defend category, we are talking about using a CDC recommended repellent, or at least a repellent that has been approved for use on people and that, you know, perhaps we have some academic research to back up its effectiveness.
Yeah. So the CDC recommends a few active ingredients. So these are things that you want to look for when you're purchasing mosquito repellent. So DEET, which we've probably all heard of and are familiar with, picaridin, oil of lemon eucalyptus, and IR3535, which I believe Shannon rings a bell from our tick episode. Is this?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So the oil of lemon eucalyptus is an essential oil from the eucalyptus plant, and it has been shown to be effective. Now, is it more effective than DEET? Well, the jury's out on that. We will know. We're actually going to talk about that in just a minute. But one thing that is important to point out is that other, I guess, oils, if you will, scents, things like lavender, peppermint, citronella, clove, I mean, should I keep going? Lemongrass, all these offer very minimal protection and for a very short period of time when it comes to mosquitoes. So, well, you know, if you're into all natural, which I fully support, but in the case of mosquitoes, that is not going to be helpful if you're using any of those.
Yeah. And one other thing I wanted to mention is oil of lemon eucalyptus might be abbreviated on an ingredient list. So you might actually see it listed as PMD. I have no idea why that is. Do you, Lara?
You know, that's a great question. I do not.
Yeah, I'm sure it has something to do with like a scientific name for whatever oil of lemon eucalyptus actually is. So, but you will see it abbreviated sometimes on active ingredient lists. So just be aware of that. So another thing that we get a lot of questions about are candles or using essential oil candles to help with mosquito protection. This has also been shown to be effective, but for very, very small areas. And it's not what I would consider personally to be a high level of repellency. So, for instance, the citronella candles are about 35% effective for repelling mosquitoes, but within 3 feet of the candle. And if you are extending that area to, say, 9 feet, you're looking at even less repellency at only 10 or 12%. And that is only on a perfectly still evening with no wind whatsoever. So that's just something to keep in mind if you're using any of the repellents that rely on burning something or releasing a vapor into the air, you need to take the wind into account.
Mm-hmm.
So do we want to talk about mosquito repellent now? Because this is another personal hot topic for me, Lara.
Yeah, I think so.
Cool. So I think the most important thing for you to know when it comes to choosing a mosquito repellent for you and or for your family is there are a lot of varieties of these products that you can get. And we do have some research to give you an idea of the amount of protection time you can expect from different products and different active ingredients. So if you want to use some of these products that are maybe a little less potent or use a lower percentage of them, you know, you don't need to use Deep Woods off-brand 50% DEET every time. You know, if you're only going to be outside 20 minutes, maybe you can use something less. We're going to provide a link to an extension document that has a chart of estimated protection time for a various number of products. But we also wanted to talk about how they work and some things you need to know that I feel like are unique to living in Florida compared to the rest of the country.
Yeah. So when it comes to mosquito repellents and how they work, basically what they're doing is making us unattractive to the mosquitoes. They're not arming the mosquitoes in any way or killing them in any way. So when it comes to repellents, and again, Shannon touched on some of the things to look for, but another key thing to factor in is that the best repellents that you can purchase will work for more than 1 hour with only one application. You don't want to have to be constantly reapplying, at least, I mean, I wouldn't want to be constantly having to reapply a product. Again, the key thing that you want to be looking for is the active ingredients. So read the label on these products. on that label, it will also talk about the frequency of application as well as the target species. So you obviously want to make sure you're using something that is targeted for mosquitoes. We're not maybe getting something that's more for ticks, like we've talked about in our tick episode. So the other really important piece is when it comes to the oil of lemon eucalyptus, that is not to be used on children under the age of 3. So there's also some age considerations for some of these products.
Yeah. And I feel like that one really surprises people because they think, oh, it's a natural product. It's going to be safer to use it on my children. But there's a lot of information about how it can be damaging to very young children. So always read the label when it comes to using an insect repellent.
Yes. Now, a question I often get asked is, can you use mosquito repellent and sunscreen? And the answer is yes. There are some products that combine the two products. However, that is not recommended by the CDC. And that's because typically, and this is really specific to for products containing DEET, but when it comes to the mosquito repellent, it should be applied less frequently than a sunscreen product. So if you're having one where they're combined, basically the concern is that you're overusing, you know, unnecessary use of DEET. So if you are concerned and want to use both products, the CDC recommendation is to apply the sunscreen first and then insect repellent containing DEET. So that's the recommendation, and that is what we are going to recommend as well.
Yeah. The important part of the Welcome to Florida piece is sunscreen first.
Yes, right.
Then your insect repellent, and then reapply your sunscreen as needed at a later time. Which I think brings up, again, that talk about what repellents to use. In that chart, or in that document that we're going to include, it does, like I mentioned, include protection times. But just to give you a little bit of that information in case you are driving and can't click on that link, DEET is, I mean, it is the gold standard, both for ticks and mosquitoes. It is just a fantastically effective insect repellent. And generally speaking, the higher the percentage of DEET, the longer your protection time will be. The one that's in this chart is approximately 24% DEET. And with one application, you're estimated to be protected for about 5 hours. Even the 6% DEET, 6.5% DEET, is estimated to protect you for about 2 hours. Now, on that same level, you can use oil of lemon eucalyptus. They don't give a percentage with that. It's just, this one is the Repel Lemon Eucalyptus repellent. That one is also estimated to protect you for 2 hours. So if you have a sensitivity to DEET, or if you're wearing sunglasses or swimwear that you don't want the DEET to dissolve some of the plastics in, the oil of lemon eucalyptus is also effective. And this chart goes all the way down to things that protect you for just 10 or 15 minutes. So there are some of the more natural insect repellents that might include citronella, peppermint oil, things like that. There's three of them on this list, and there are five of them on this list, and they'll protect you anywhere from 10 to 20 minutes. So if you're just going out to take the dog out, maybe that's all you need. Maybe you don't need something more intense, but be aware that if you're going to be outside for a lot longer, you're either going to need to keep reapplying it, which I think is safe to say, Lara, I don't know about you, but I am horrible at reapplying things. I just don't pay attention. And then when it comes to mosquitoes, you're exposing yourself to potentially those mosquito-borne illness. The only repellents on this list I'm really going to call out as ineffective are going to be the wristbands. So our University of Florida IFAS mosquito research team tests repellents to see how long they'll protect you for. And across the board, all three of the wristbands that they tested, even the ones that contain DEET, provided 0 minutes of protection. So I just wanted to bring that up because I know I get a lot of phone calls about the wristbands, especially from mothers and fathers of young children. They want the wristbands because they're concerned about the insect repellent on their children's skin. And I completely understand that. But I would much rather people know that the wristbands aren't shown to be effective before using their money on it and trusting that they will protect their children. So just, you know, if you're looking for a new insect repellent, go to our show notes, check out this list. There's a very detailed chart, and they update it every few years if memory serves correctly. So we have recommendations for you.
Yeah. And I know that Shannon and I covered a lot today on mosquitoes. We hope that you learn something new. We hope that you're going to take actions to protect yourself and your family and really your neighbors too, by doing some of the control efforts. And be sure again to check out the show notes for all the resources we mentioned today. And we will see you on our next episode.
Thanks for listening to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. Stay updated on new episodes by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider sharing it with a friend. Naturally Florida is produced by your hosts, Shannon Carnavalli
and Lara Milligan.
If you have questions or suggestions, submit them online at naturallyfloridapodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension, an equal opportunity institution. Thank you for listening.